Okay, item number seven is our report from Gary Wolf, our State Water Board member liaison. Mr. Briggs?
Mr. Wolf.
Okay.
It will be now. There we go.
How do I turn? There we go. Thank you for adopting the minutes and your uncontested items calendar. Otherwise, I had an impossible act to follow, so I had a little. And I have to say, before this morning, it never occurred to me that I should be going anyplace soon, leaving the region or leaving the water board system. But given the send-off you gave the two people, I'm sorely tempted. I usually report on what's going on in Sacramento at the state board, but I actually haven't been in Sacramento over the last 4 weeks. I've been intensively traveling around the state, and I think it might be more useful to tell you about a couple of the things that I saw and learned in my travels. It's the most fun part of my job. I get out and I see the obstacles people are facing and the successes that they've achieved and hear about how they achieved it, and it's very useful. So I thought I'd tell you about two types of things I've seen in the last month. One is I've been looking into stormwater reuse, that is treating a poor quality stormwater and then reusing it for water supply. And the first set of facilities I visited were on the Malibu coast in Los Angeles County. There are three facilities that have been partially funded as part of our Clean Beaches Initiative, one at Paradise Cove, another one at Marie Canyon Creek, and the third one, I think it's Malibu Creek. It's the creek that runs through the center of the town of Malibu. And in all three cases, they've constructed a small dry weather flow stormwater treatment facilities. The facilities are about the size of a little pump station, so they're pretty small. They typically have multimedia filtration to filter these low flows during the dry season. And then they disinfect the water because it's very high in bacteria, and people get sick on the beaches. The beaches are intensively used. Two of the facilities use ultraviolet light to disinfect, and the third one uses ozone. And all three facilities are very successful at solving the water quality problem. Two of the facilities, though, have begun or are going to reuse the treated stormwater for landscape irrigation. And that connection is of interest to me because it fundamentally changes the economics of stormwater treatment. You know, if you think about it, what we face in stormwater regulation underneath all the regs and rules and issues, detail issues, is we face a serious economic challenge. There's billions of dollars of investment that's needed, and we're in a fundamentally different place than we were 30 years ago with the Clean Water Act, which was actually adopted about 35 years ago, earlier this week. Where 87.5% of capital investments for point source treatment works, sewage treatment plants and so forth, were paid for by either the federal or state government. The local share was only 12.5%. But we have the reverse for stormwater now because of the changes in the structural deficits at federal and state level. Local government has to pay 90% or more. And with Prop 13 and Prop 218, that's very, very difficult. So we have this underlying economic landscape, which makes it very hard for local government to invest as much as might be needed for water quality protection. And so the stormwater reuse benefit is a pull factor that helps to add a positive economics to the negative economics of just having to pay to treat stormwater. So it was nice to see these two facilities were looking at reuse, and I think it fundamentally changes the economics some. The week after that, I went and saw something called Sun Valley Park, which Los Angeles County has put together in a northern part of Los Angeles County. And what they've done there is similar. They've taken stormwater, they pull it off of streets, and they treat it in some underground basins where they filter it, they remove oil and grease, and then they percolate it through large gravel packs that have been installed underneath the playing fields in a park, Sun Valley Park. And the soil filtration removes the bacteria. And then there are municipal supply wells, not immediately there, but in the same aquifer, which can then pull the water out for reuse. And so they're actually getting three benefits there: a water quality benefit, a water supply benefit, and an avoided flood control expense benefit, because this is an area that has flooded frequently, and they were looking at very, very large flood control expenditures to convey this water out of the area. And I just received by email yesterday their economic model for this. So avoided flood control expenses are another pull factor that, if we can tap into, will help us to solve our stormwater quality problems. So I wanted to mention these to you. I think these pull factors fundamentally changing the economics around stormwater quality issues can be very helpful to us as a board system. As we push on the regulatory front, whenever we connect with the pull factors, it makes it a lot easier. And we don't have to get caught up in the fight about, you know, if you make us do this, we're going to lose police and fire protection, which I know you've heard many times and is a very real concern that people bring up. The second kind of thing I've been seeing and hearing about on my tours is best exemplified up in Fortuna, California, where I was last week, south of Arcata. The North Coast Integrated Regional Water Management Plan proposal was the highest rated IRWMP proposal in the state for Prop 50 funding. They got $25 million. It was a seven-county effort. Just pulling those seven counties together is an amazing achievement. You know, think about Sonoma County and Siskiyou County. They're pretty different. And for them to join together with five other counties in an integrated planning effort is quite impressive. And they had a couple hundred people at this watershed gathering in Fortuna. And the topic I discussed with them was, how will your watershed efforts be sustained after the last grant dollar is spent? Because right now we have Prop 50 money, and then we're going to have Prop 84 money, another $1 billion. But all of that together still only adds up to maybe 10 or 15% of the cost of these facilities. And it's enough of a carrot to draw people together, to work together for a while in order to get some grant money. But how are they going to sustain that kind of you know, planning and collaboration once that grant money is gone? And there are two kind of governance structures that have been used around the world to do that. One is sort of the JPA format, where you have an actual entity which exists with authority to do something at the watershed scale, say planning of some sort, where all of the flood control, water supply agencies, wastewater agencies, et cetera, participate in it. The model for that would be maybe the Tennessee Valley Authority or the Delaware River Basin Commission. So that's one structure where these functional entities share some of their power through a separate entity that they create. The other structure is more of a permanent watershed council, but where it's permanently funded by these special agencies. The model for that is the Interstate Commission on the Potomac River Basin, where they have about 40 staff, and they're just a coordinating entity. They study things, and they look at it from a regional scale and from a watershed scale, and they report out to all the different agencies and entities that participate in supporting them, here's a way we can coordinate that would save some money by these six agencies working together on this particular project or that. And so they're a way of, you know, creating a reward for collaboration, but without actually transferring any authority to a separate entity. So we had a very interesting conversation around that, and I thought that might be interesting here because this region, in all of its discussions of strategy for the long run, has really had a strong watershed emphasis, but I haven't actually heard a discussion of sort of governance mechanisms in the long run and how you do that. So those are two topics that I've been working on as a state board member. I'd be glad to answer any questions on them. Also, we did hold a workshop in Los Angeles 3 weeks ago on our water recycling policy, and that's another big picture, long-term thing we've been working on, and I'd be happy to answer questions on that if you've been hearing anything about that.
Sounds great. Could we get copies of the economic models on the Sun Valley? And,
sure.
And maybe the other one, too. As you say, there are lots of great ideas out there. There's good technology, but what seems to be the least developed are funding models. So people say, okay, you can do it. Technically, you can do it. Technologically, you can do it.
Right.
Or from a design perspective, you can do it. But I rarely see pretty detailed real-life dollars. And you have to have that to make any kind of persuasive argument. So I'd love to see that.
Right, right. Well, on the LA County one for Sun Valley, I can send that on to you.
I'd love it.
There isn't actually an economic model for the other three, the Malibu Coast ones. If I can get information from my notes and clean it, I'll pass it on. But there's not an actual model or analysis that I've seen yet.
Well, certainly the other one would be great to have.
Thank you. I will. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Dr. Wolf, also, you might share with us, I know the State Board is going to hold a board meeting in the Carmel, Monterey area on an issue that our board had discussed, I think, at our last board meeting.
Yes.
Would you like to fill us in on that?
Well, I'm not prepared to actually talk about the details of that issue. This is the issue you wrote the letter about.
Yes, but I mean just what the board's going to conduct a hearing.
Well, in big picture, and I think this was my idea actually, but in the big picture, we're trying to get the state board out and around the state more and hold meetings in different regions. So we held a meeting in Fresno to discuss the irrigated lands waiver. That was a co-meeting held along with the Central Valley Board. We held a meeting in Los Angeles that was just a regular meeting of the state board, but held in Los Angeles rather than Sacramento. And then we'll be holding a meeting in Carmel, Monterey in the spring. That'll be a state board meeting with this topic as one of the topics on the agenda. But, you know, getting out and being more accessible to people around the state is critically important, we think, in, you know, helping to weld the state board, the water board system together as one system. You know, a lot of people around the state have never attended a state water board meeting because they're always held in Sacramento, and unless you had business before the board, there was no reason to go. So by getting out and around, we hear more what's going on and what the local concerns are, and that's part of the purpose of coming in the early spring. Yeah.
Mr. Shallcross.
Yeah, sort of on a note of something that folks who have attended state water board meetings.
Yeah.
I often hear, a lot, that they feel that it was that the way the meeting is set up is sort of disrespectful to people who are actually talking or doing a presentation. Hmm. That board members are often on the phone, they often leave. I know you guys are real busy, but if you're going to go around the state and do that, I think you're probably not doing yourself a big favor. I understand you can get away with it in Sacramento, but just a little note of advice.
That's an interesting point.
Yeah. And I've been up there too, and that's exactly what happens. Three board members leave; they're over here talking in the corner.
Yeah,
one's on the phone.
Yeah.
It just feels very disrespectful.
Right.
And so,
right. Your comment is noted.
Okay.
I try to make a point myself of staying there and listening to people till the end, however late that may be, 6 or 7 p.m. sometimes. This board sets a standard in that way. You know, you take your time, you listen to your stakeholders, your meetings are lengthy, but not, you know, you're not wasting anyone's time, you're listening. You're really giving people their moment in the sun, if you will, and be sure their arguments get heard. I personally hold that same philosophy, but not every board member does, and I can simply pass on your comment to others, and they'll do as they please. Yeah.
Okay. Just in furtherance, then, of your meeting in the Carmel-Monterey area, I think what I wanted our audience to know that our last at this board's last meeting, we had a discussion regarding impacts to beneficial uses in the Carmel River lower watershed that our board is concerned about.
Yeah.
And we had some communication with the state board, and so it's going to be one of the agenda items at that meeting.
Yes.
And so the state board, which has an ongoing or a pending enforcement action regarding water use, water supply issues, is at least going to be, I think, getting a status report or just having a discussion about what can be done to address impacts to beneficial uses.
Yeah.
So that's important.
Sure,
thank you for...
I should comment that Francis Spivey Weber and I had a briefing a couple weeks ago that is related to this, not directly on the topic that you wrote about, but related, which is that there are a group of people in the Monterey-Carmel area, including many of the water agencies and wastewater providers, who have been meeting in an attempt to figure out... sort of regional water supply planning, if you will, and you know, they've run some scenarios for different ways of meeting the region's needs that include mixes and matches of different types of water supply. Stormwater reuse is in there for the first time. More aggressive water recycling is in there for the first time. More effective use of water from the Salinas River, different sizes of desalination facilities without regard to the politics of the facilities, but just sort of engineering analysis. And they've had a wide range of parties involved. So two of us had a briefing on that recently. So it's interesting. There's some very good thinking going on that all of the stakeholder groups have been involved in that area. And it's all related to ultimately how the water take from the Carmel River can be reduced. The order you're referring to is a water rights order. I think it's 95-10, 95-something. I think it's 10. Which was the order to Cal American to reduce its take of water from the Carmel River. There is no enforcement action pending.
Oh, okay.
It's just the water rights order exists, and people have asked us to take enforcement action, but the decision so far has been that the parties are continuing to operate in good faith, and we're letting it sit.
Okay.
That's, it's hard to explain to people why 12 years after a water rights order ordered people to, to stop taking less water, why anything hasn't happened. But sadly, that's the way the system works sometimes. We can't quite figure out what the next step is, so we don't take the next step.
Well, we'll be watching.
Okay.
And hopeful.
Okay.
And then perhaps after your field hearing meeting,
right,
we'll get an update from you.
Right.
Sure. On what happens.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Last
comment. I will
sure.
be leaving the meeting now. I won't be here for the rest of the meeting. I apologize. But it happens that there is a meeting at UC Santa Barbara scheduled for today on the application of financial portfolio theory to water supply planning, which is something I've been involved in. And it just happened they scheduled that meeting to be down here this day. So I apologize for having to leave.
Thank you for coming.
Sure.
Okay. All right. We'll move on to agenda.